This is an interview with prosecuting attorney Vincent Gil Martin, being done for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project on the Democratic Party. It's being done by Mark Conley at Attorney Gil Martin's office located in Mahoning County Courthouse. Date is February 26, 1975. Okay, Mr. Gil Martin, would you please talk a little bit about your background, your family background, neighborhood, education?
Well, Mark, I was born at 101 North Bella Vista Avenue here in Youngstown, Ohio, back on January 17, 1928. I went to grade school at St. Brendan's up on the west side of Youngstown. Graduated from Ursuline High School in 1946. From there, I got a Bachelor of Arts degree from Harvard College in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and then received my Doctor of Laws degree from Ohio Northern University. That's generally speaking my educational background. I did spend 2 years in the United States Army between 1954 and 1956 when I was stationed in Germany, and I returned to Youngstown after completing my education and my time in service. I was married to Jelaine Roscoe from Cleveland, Ohio in 1960, and we have three daughters. Eileen is presently 14, and the other two, Denise is 11 and Christine 10.
What about your parents? What did your father do for a living?
Well, my father was born in Ireland, and he was born in the County Mayo in the western part of Ireland, and he emigrated to America back in about 1910. He drove buses in New York for several years and then came out to Youngstown where he worked in the steel mills. He was drafted, I imagine, or at least he served in World War I and fought in, I understand, the five major battles of World War I, the Argonne Meuse and the Black Forest. He had five major battle scars in World War I. When the war was completed, he returned to Youngstown and he married my mother, the former Catherine Rice. Now, my mother was also born in Ireland. She was born in just outside of Newry in the County Down, which is in Northern Ireland, but she was from the County Armagh, which is just on the hillside overlooking the town of Newry. My mother also came to the States from Ireland in about 1912, I imagine, and she originally settled in Pittsburgh and then came to Youngstown sometime prior to World War I. And my parents were married at St. Edward's Church by Monsignor Griffin, I believe in 1919. And we had a family of four. I have a brother, James, who was born in 1920. He died in 1952. Then I have a sister, Catherine, who is Catherine Coyle now by marriage. She married a gentleman named Frank Coyle. And then I have a brother, Tom, who is our state representative from the 51st District. And I'm the baby, being born in January of 1928.
Now, you say, did you grow up on Bella Vista?
Yes, I was born at home, incidentally, at 101 North Bella Vista. That was my residence until the time I was married. I always returned home from college or from the service, and then I lived there until I was married in 1960. That has continued to be our home. Last year, my father passed away in May, and since that time, my mother took a bad fall. She's still living, but she's now at the Assumption Nursing Home, and just about 3 months ago, we sold the home on 101 North Bella Vista.
While you were growing up, was it basically an Irish neighborhood?
No, I would have to say that the west side of Youngstown would have been primarily Slavs, Hungarians, and some Irish and a few Italians, but primarily the largest group in around Bella Vista Avenue would have been the Slovak people from Holy Name Parish and St. Mary's.
Do you recall some of your friends?
Well, on Bella Vista Avenue, there was Frank Pelosi that lived over the street from me. that has been a lifelong friend. He now is a supervisor for Superior Dairy. Harold Ong lived over near the intersection of Mahoning and Bell Vista, and he also is with the Superior Dairy. Eugene Silvashi lived over the street from us, and he is now in insurance. I'm not exactly not sure which company he's with. Anthony Popio lived two doors away from me, and he is now living in Poland and is a sales representative. Across the street from us, the Sipos family lived, and I'm very lifelong friends with Louis Sipos. Those were friends of mine from the neighborhood. Of course, I had a lot of friends that I went to grade school at St. Brendan's, and my class at St. Brendan's and my class at Ursuline, but many of those didn't live right in the Bell Vista vicinity.
Now, when you went away to college, either to the undergraduate school or law school, what activities did you enter into besides actual course of study?
Well, when I went to Harvard, I was active in the Democratic Club at Harvard College. I wrote a few poems from time to time. I was primarily a history and a government major. I belonged to several of the government clubs and participated in, I would say, a good measure of the school activities. Actually, there's so many things that take place at the undergraduate level at Harvard that you could just burn yourself out doing all sorts of non-academic things. But I would say that club-wise, I probably did more with the there was the Harvard Catholic Club. I was active in that. It originally was the St. Benedict Center. And the St. Benedict Center was founded by this Father Feeney. And Feeney was a very persuasive priest. However, he ran afoul of a lot of the church doctrine, and the Feeneyites eventually were excommunicated. And it was a rather turbulent time for Catholic students at Harvard College because many of them felt a great loyalty to Father Feeney, who was a very influential individual. But he taught he had a belief that there was absolutely no redemption outside of the Catholic Church. And he took a very hard-line attitude about the necessity for subscribing and belonging to everything the Catholic Church taught. And his teachings ran afoul of the bishop at that time. I believe the bishop then was Bishop Cushing in Boston, who since became Cardinal Cushing. But at that time, he was Archbishop Cushing. And Bishop Wright was one of the bishops in Boston at the time, and he is now the Archbishop of Detroit, I believe. But anyhow, I was somewhat active in the St. Benedict Center, which eventually became known as the Harvard Catholic Club because it lost its identity and was completely transferred because of the controversy that set up. The controversy was much deeper than most people back here may be aware of. Several professors from Boston College, which is a Jesuit college in Massachusetts, I think one of them was named Fakhri Ballou, and several other members of the faculty there were all, I believe, excommunicated or placed under some sort of papal indult by reason of these activities.
Did you take any position on the matter?
Well, I didn't take any outspoken type of position, but I certainly felt that the church was correct in curtailing this type of hard-line attitude.
Did you have a type of personal relationship with Father Feeney?
No, I don't think he would have known me any as well as many of the other students that were there. But I do recall one of my roommates was named Eric Biddle from Boston, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Eric was Catholic. His mother was Catholic, and his father was not a Catholic. And one time we went to hear Father Feeney, and he was telling us that if we were to communicate with any Protestant, And if they did not become Catholics in a very short order, after three or four meetings with them, that we should just infer that they had a hardness of heart that would not permit them to see the error of their ways, and that we should sever any connection with them because of the hardness of their attitude. Well, of course, this didn't sit very well with Eric because his father was Protestant, and to even suggest that his father had a hard heart and that he should sever any connection with him was almost unbelievable. But that was just how straight-laced and hard-lined the Feeney teaching was.
Did any subjects or activities at Harvard lend themselves to your present position, do you think? More so than others?
Well, I would say that the English department at Harvard is particularly strong. I think that it helped me with a good grasp of the English language and ability to express myself. And, of course, I did take speech while I was at Harvard, and I think that that probably helped me somewhat along the way. We also had some excellent government instructors, municipal government, state government, and of course I was an assistant law director before I came on this job, and I have tried appropriation cases for the highway department, so I've had a good deal of experience with state government and with municipal government, and I did take those courses. Unfortunately, they never gave a course on county government, and that's where I am right now.
Okay, once you graduated from law school, then when you came back to the city, what were your plans and what actually happened?
Well, I planned to practice law. I didn't have any particular idea to seek any particular type of public office, and I just assumed that I would practice law and do whatever came naturally, I guess. However, I did take a position handling eminent domain proceedings for the State Highway Department. And shortly after I joined the Highway Department, the arterial highway system was then being set up for the city of Youngstown. And I did handle the acquisition of most of the appropriations, meaning those that had to go to court rather than those who voluntarily conveyed, to the State Highway Department. The first section of the arterial highway was from Market Street to Bell Vista, which cuts under Glenwood Avenue and across a rather congested area. We had an awful lot of appropriation cases during that particular link. We knocked out the Renner Brewery. We knocked out a variety of business establishments that had been here for an awful long time. Several churches were taken, and we knocked out several manufacturing outlets down underneath, down near the present Mahoning Avenue Bridge along the Salt Spring Road area. And then we handled other acquisitions beyond that in connection with the arterial highway. While I was with the highway department, we handled the widening of Oak Street, which is 422 heading east from Youngstown. And we also handled widenings in Trumbull County and in other parts of the Division 4 area. Division 4 is a 6-county area in northeastern Ohio, but most of my assignments were in Mahoning and Trumbull County.
Did you find this job satisfying?
Oh, I found it very interesting. I found it to be a very rich and rewarding experience. And after I left the Highway Department, I joined the Flask Administration as an assistant law director for the city of Youngstown. And although I did handle sidewalk cases and regular cases against the city of Youngstown, my principal assignment was in charge of acquisition. So we handled the acquisition of the urban renewal property for downtown Youngstown. We handled the widening of Williamson Avenue, of Midlothian Boulevard. We were instrumental in securing the Westlake properties for purposes of putting in the Madison Expressway that presently runs across the north side.
we appropriated properties in downtown Youngstown in connection with the inner loop. We took out the Serbu property that was down there for many, many years. We handled acquisitions of the Salvation Army, of several business establishments over in the, that would be the northeast quadrant of downtown Youngstown.
I'd like to get back to this building a little bit, but how did the appointment by Mayor-elect Blass come about? Were you involved in the Democratic Party before?
Oh, yes. Well, I've been fairly active in the Democratic Party since I did get out of the service in about 1956. My brother Tommy was a state representative. He was elected to the General Assembly, I believe, the first time in November of 1956. I got out of the service in September of 56. So naturally, I assisted Tom in the fall campaign. And of course, being a state representative, he had to run for office every 2 years, and every other year there would be a Democratic primary and a general election. So I became familiar with the office holders and the party workers throughout Mahoning County, because at that time the state representative was elected throughout the entire county at large. And there were three or four state representatives from Mahoning County, depending upon how the sequence ran according to the census.
What sort of role did you take in the campaign?
Well, I would just go out and speak on Tom's behalf and attend rallies and help him with his news releases or help him with his speeches, and put up signs or do all the things that you probably connect with a political campaign.
And how did Mayor Flask come about picking you to be the assistant moderator?
Well, when Flask was elected in, he would have been elected to the mayor's office in, I believe he was elected in 63, I guess. And, well, Pat Melillo was appointed as the law director, and so I stopped to see Mr. Melillo and told him that I would be interested in joining the Flask administration. And, of course, I'd always gotten along very well and still get along to this day very well with Mayor Flask. And so I guess it was just I requested an opportunity to join the administration and was favorably considered.
Did you find your political horizons opening once you took this job?
As an assistant law director? Well, I don't think so. I wouldn't think it was any more of a political responsibility than having handled property for the highway department. It was just that you were confined now to acquisitions inside the city of Youngstown, so that we wouldn't have assignments in Trumbull County or acquisitions out in the other areas of Mahoning County. So that again, we were not in acquisition as such. We were in the appropriation, the eminent domain aspect. Although I would advise the negotiators and the right-of-way agents who did buy property for the city, I would pass upon the title to see whether or not everybody who had to sign would be on the paper for a voluntary conveyance also, or that we were acquiring what we had to have in accordance with the plan.
Around 1965, I decided to run for the 7th District Court of Appeals.
That is correct.
What did you make you choose this?
Well, I guess just felt that it was the possibility that I could probably be elected to such a judgeship. At that time, the old 7th District was comprised of 13 counties, and it was actually a backbreaking geographical entity. It ran from Lake Erie on the north all the way down to the Ohio River, and then some, because it continued after you reached the river. It included counties down below Belmont County, such as Noble and Monroe counties, which are very far away from here. It also included Ashtabula County and Lake County, Geauga County to the north. I looked over the district and felt that I would have a good possibility of being elected as a judge of the 7th District Court of Appeals. And so in 1966, I did make a run for that particular position.
Now, what you say you looked it over, what did you see that would be conducive to you being elected?
Well, being a Democrat, I kind of looked at the compositions of the counties. The principal counties in the district at that time were Mahoning County, which is overwhelmingly Democrat, Trumbull County, which is very substantially Democrat, Jefferson County and Belmont County, which have great Democratic pluralities. Lake County at that time was burgeoning out as a Democratic stronghold. And the balance of the district was not unduly difficult for Democratic candidates either. Columbiana County was, relatively speaking, a 50-50 county. Portage County was just about in that same category. Geauga County would have been a Republican county, but it's a very small county population-wise. Carroll County is not very large. I would say it tends to be more Republican. Harrison County is not very large. It would probably tend to be Republican. The two small counties to the south, Noble and Monroe, I would say tend to be a little more Democrat than Republican. So just on paper, it looked like a good prospect for a Democratic candidate, although in a fall election, you do not run with a party designation.
So there was no nomination?
Yes, I was nominated in a Democratic primary in May.
That's when you beat Kelly.
Yes.
Who was Ben Kelly?
Well, Ben Kelly was and is a practicing attorney here in Mahoning County, and he just decided to run for the 7th District Court of Appeals in the Democratic primary at the same time that I happened to be running. And Mr. Kelly did a very good job throughout 11 of the 13 counties. The name, of course, is a very agreeable name. And the name Gilmartin, although it's quite well known in Mahoning and Trumbull counties, is not very well known in the other 11 counties.
So you say that was a pretty tough primary?
Well, the results were not that close because I happened to carry Mahoning County and Trumbull County so overwhelmingly that the other 11 counties, I lost, but the losses were all quite small from county to county, and when it was all over, I don't know what the vote was, but I probably beat Mr. Kelly 2-1, because most of the registered Democrats are still in Youngstown, in Mahoning County. We happen to vote a much higher percentage in a primary, and we happen to have a bigger population, too.
How did you set up your campaign for this sort of election?
Well, I really didn't put out much of a campaign for the primary because I felt if I couldn't win the primary, I certainly wasn't going to. If I couldn't win the primary without a great effort, I certainly was going to have a great difficulty in the fall election. So I really just moved around myself and went to different party affairs and went to the various county fairs and activities where there would be a lot of people.
So you didn't have a large staff working for you?
Oh no, I would say that there were only about four or five people who really took much interest in the campaign.
About how much would this sort of campaign cost?
Well, I don't recall now, but in the primary I probably spent maybe $1,500.
So were you fairly confident once you had got the nomination?
Yes, I would say that I was pretty confident that I would probably be successful in the fall election. My opponent was George Jones, and George had been on the court for a few years, and he was from Trumbull County, but just over the line, and would have been considered as a former Youngstown attorney from the area. And he's a very likable man, and there was no question about his competence or his ability or whether he was a likely fellow or anything of that sort. But I just felt that public office is for those who aspire to it. It wasn't that I felt that he wasn't doing an adequate job. So that was the basis that I entered the campaign, and that was the way that it was conducted.
Okay, so the next question would be, what happened?
Well, in the fall, we had a misfortune to run into a Republican landslide. That was the year that Rhodes was seeking re-election as governor, and his opponent was Fraser Reams from Toledo. And Mr. Reams was a very nice man, but he didn't pull off very much vote appeal. And as the head of the ticket, he really didn't help greatly any of the candidates that were running with him. Now, of course, I was running without any party designation. But nonetheless, very often, if you happen to be the Democratic nominee for a judgeship, in a year when the Democratic Party is running very well, the chances are you will be more successful than in other years. So that in the fall election, I did carry Mahoning and Trumbull counties by rather substantial amounts. But then in the other 11 counties, again, I ran into a real windmill and lost counties that would normally have been carried by a Democratic candidate, all other things being equal. Because while I was losing, many of the Democratic candidates at the local level were winning. In other words, they were electing a Democratic commissioner, a Democratic auditor, a Democratic clerk of courts, or whatever the local partisan office might have been in Belmont County or Jefferson County or Lake County.
How strong were you in Mahoning?
Well, I don't have the votes right now, but I carried Mahoning County by a little over 10,000 votes. I know that. It was a little over 10,000 votes in Mahoning County.
If you say you ran without the party designation,
yes.
Did they still support you in any way?
Oh, yes. In other words, the Democratic Party indicated who they were preferring, particularly in the Mahoning County area. Now, in the other counties, there was no set practice. The party people as such would support whoever the Democratic nominee would be, but the degree of support and the degree of identification would depend upon the wishes of the individual party.
What about the party in Mahoning County? How actively did they support you in that?
Well, they supported me along with a variety of other judicial candidates at that time. They would put you on the party literature and explain that you were running on the nonpartisan ballot. And at that time, I believe, Judge Harold Rickert was seeking re-election as a judge of the Domestic Relations Court. I believe Horace Tetlow was running against Judge Henderson in probate court. Judge O'Neill was running for the 7th District Court of Appeals as a running mate in the same territory that I was running in, and he was running against a Republican whose name was Nils Johnson. Nils Johnson was also on the bench on the 7th District Court of Appeals. And I believe that Mike Yurchison was running for against Judge Maiden. I'm not certain just now who all the individuals were. But by and large, the candidates for the judgeships, the Democratic candidates, were not too successful. Judge O'Neill did win. He beat Johnson. Of course, at that time, the name Johnson was not a particularly popular name, and it was very closely identified with the Democrats. Nils Johnson happened to be a Republican that particular year, and the name Johnson, I'm sure, did him a disservice.
Right now, let's talk about names in the area.
Yes.
You see, you point out the name Johnson. Here, he's a Republican, but he identified with the Democrat, obviously.
Well, the people themselves, not
right.
He, but the
right.
People identified
right.
That name as being a Democratic name, and they were incorrect. And he was a very able and capable judge in his own right, too.
But how important are names in this area, as far as politics?
Well, I think that throughout the state of Ohio, the name game is notorious. It's treacherous. I would say that at the state level, it's kind of a joke to have about 6 or 7 Browns occupying separate positions at the state level. To have the Herberts, the Tafts, and just a small random selection of names. To have a lieutenant governor named Brown and a Secretary of State named Brown. They have the Attorney General named Brown, and two members of the Ohio Supreme Court named Brown. Now, I'm not saying that none of these people are competent. I don't mean that either. But it's very remarkable that all of them should be more competent than everyone else. And, of course, we have that name game with Tracy. We have it with Taft. And we have it with Herbert. We had the Mathiases on the Supreme Court. The name game is very predominant throughout Ohio. Now, that doesn't mean it's predominant as you get into local government. The name then, I don't think, is nearly as effective, because people actually know who their councilman is or who their candidate for mayor is. People actually know who their state representative or their sheriff might be. I don't think that people in Mahoning County would be fooled by just voting for a name. I don't think it would work that well. But when you start going into 88 counties, you have a great problem of communicating.
So after the election for 7th District Court of Appeals, what did you do for the year between there and when you petitioned the Mahoning County Prosecutor?
I was still with the city law department. I was still handling land acquisition. I did take a leave of absence from my position during the time that I was campaigning, because I couldn't be in the 13 counties and do my job. So that I did take a leave of absence while I was a candidate for the 7th District Court of Appeals. But then after we were unsuccessful in the November election, I put my tail between my legs and went back to work in the city law department.
One more thing on the campaign for the 7th District Court of Appeals. Did it cost more or less to run in the actual election than it did in the primary?
Oh, I'd say it cost more. It would have cost more. I really don't know, but I would estimate that it cost maybe $6,000 or $7,000. I'm not really certain now what it would have been.
Now, when you ran for prosecuting attorney, you were unopposed, right?
In the primary?
In the primary.
Yes.
Can you talk a little about this? Why was there no opposition at the time?
Well, I can only speculate as to why there was no opposition. The Democrats had lost the prosecutor's office many years before. For a period of 12 years, the Republicans had the Mahoning County prosecuting attorney's office. So the Democrats were very desirous of fielding a successful candidate. And I'm sure there was some thinking on the part of people in positions of leadership in the Democratic Party that I would be an attractive enough candidate because of the vote that I had received against an incumbent judge for the 7th District Court of Appeals. And I'm sure that that was a factor in urging my candidacy. I was not really very enthusiastic about seeking the position. I was more interested in going for a judgeship at that particular time.
Why was that?
Well, I don't know. I just didn't conceive of myself as a prosecuting attorney. I more or less had my own idea that I would be more inclined towards a judicial position. It was just, I really couldn't pin down what it was. But anyhow, I did file in the Democratic primary then in 1968, and I was unopposed, which was very helpful.
Who approached you about taking the position, or at least?
Jack Sullivan, who is the chairman of the Democratic Party, discussed it with me. But then I had a variety of other people who were active in the Democratic Party who suggested that I should consider making this run. I recall at Christmas of 1967, I guess it would have been, just prior to the time when you'd be announcing your candidacies, you had to announce by February or file by February. There was a big Christmas party, I recall, at the Homewood Hall, the old Homewood Hall down there in the 7th Ward that has since been taken away by a highway improvement, which I didn't have anything to do with, incidentally, the acquisition. But there was a big Christmas party, and all of the party leaders were there, and ward captains and precinct committeemen. And I recall that at that particular meeting, everybody was suggesting that I would be a very good candidate to run for prosecutor, and that they were encouraging me to run.
Did anybody else hint at the fact that they might like to run for it?
Yes. Harold Rickert, who had run for the party position a few years earlier, been unsuccessful, indicated that he was thinking of running, and there were a few other attorneys at the time that just mentioned a casual interest that they might be interested in running, but they wanted to know whether I was going to run or what was going to happen. And Mr. Rickert and I did discuss this, and there came a time when I advised him that I was planning to run, and then he said, well, if I were to run, he was not going to.
Do you think Mr. Sullivan, or people in positions of leadership, had discussed these matters with all the people who were thinking about running? Or was that just common knowledge throughout the party?
Well, I think it was pretty common knowledge that that at that time that the party would have liked me to be the candidate, because at this particular Christmas party that I referred to earlier, Mr. Sullivan was the one that suggested that I would be a good candidate for county prosecutor, and he ordinarily doesn't go out and just pick somebody and say he should run for some particular office. He more or less lets it sit for itself. Ordinarily, knowing Mr. Sullivan, he usually kind of gets the feel of what most of the people in the party seem to feel, and then he espouses that type of course.
And how did he approach you on the matter? Do you like you can remember you describe it?
Well, I don't recall any particular interviews that I had with him or meetings that I had with him, but Mr. Sullivan did recommend to me that I should consider running for county prosecutor. He thought that I would be an asset to the ticket and that I would help the balance of the ticket, and that he thought I could be successful. And after all, the Democratic Party is running candidates primarily to be successful. They're not just interested in fielding somebody just to fill a slot.
Would he point back to the election for 7th District Court of Appeals as the reason why you could win? Because the Republicans held the office for, what, 12 years?
Yes. Well, I don't know that he... I was aware of the vote that I had. He was aware because he works at the Board of Elections, and he can tell you pretty well what results there were in any given election. But I don't recall that we had a great conversation about that aspect, but I'm sure that that was a factor.
Again, what made you feel confident, again, at winning the election over Anzalone? He was the incumbent.
Well, I really didn't feel confident. I felt that I could certainly run a credible race. I felt that it would be an interesting race, and I knew that the Republicans would probably give me a good tussle. But I felt that I had a good possibility because I didn't think that Frank Anzalone, although he came from a very fine background and a good family, I felt that Frank Anzalone wouldn't have any more voter appeal than George Jones would have had. I was just more or less weighing the two from the standpoint of their voter appeal. And since this race would be confined to Mahoning County rather than a big district as the former race was, I felt that the prospect would be pretty good.
Now, how did you go about organizing a campaign for this particular election, as opposed to, say, the other one, which was more spread out?
Well, I would more or less just keep apprised of what was happening throughout the county. I would go out to the Sebring area, and I would talk with people from Sebring and try to enlist some help in the Sebring area. I would go to the Lake Milton area or the other outlying parts of Mahoning County where I would not be as well known as I was around Youngstown. I am a lifelong resident of Youngstown. I was always well known in the 4th Ward and throughout Austintown because I'm from the West Side. And so I felt that I should get out to Struthers and out to New Middletown and to all these other outlying parts of the county and just try to enlist some support.
how large of a campaign staff did you have for this particular?
Well, I don't know that we had a campaign staff as such. We had maybe 8 or 10 people that really worked very closely in the campaign. They weren't really a campaign staff as such because many of them were members of the Democratic Party organization, and they would really be helping a whole slate of candidates rather than an individual candidate.
Do you have any particular, like, main manager, somebody who was really working close with you on that?
Well, Harold Ong was my campaign manager. He was the one that ran the ads as they appeared in the newspaper, or they appeared over his name as campaign manager, and also anything on television. And of course, Harold was a lifelong friend of mine from Del Vista, and I'm sure he helped enlist support for me with the drivers who were working for the Isley Dairy Company at that time, and members of the Teamsters Local 377, and in areas such as that where I could certainly use support. Stan Goldish, who is presently working in this office, was very instrumental in my campaign. George Vukovich, our present clerk of courts. There was a variety of people. Of course, Jack Sulligan and the Democratic organization was very closely allied with my campaign. But as I say, many people who are with the Democratic organization wouldn't be working exclusively for just the prosecutor's campaign. They would also be helping the sheriff candidate and the other candidates.
Now, the cost of this campaign was relatively low, wasn't it?
I would say yes.
Now, how would you allocate such a little amount of money in a campaign like this? Where would you put most of it, and where would you hold back?
Well, first we would get some cards printed with a little short biographical information explaining where I went to school and that I was married and what church I attended, and background of that sort with a picture on, and we would disseminate these cards where we would go. We would buy, I believe we bought wet naps. A wet nap is a little towelette that you use to wipe your hands, and we had some lemon-scented towelettes that we used and were very good with the women particularly, because they would like to keep these in their purse and use them when the children would get slopped up on chicken or whatever else. So that was primarily our campaign tool, the small wet nap that we distributed. I think we distributed maybe 50,000 wet naps.
Do you recall what Anzalotti used?
He used yardsticks. He had some yardsticks, I recall, that they passed at the Canfield Fair and at card parties and things of that sort. Now, he may have had some other items, but none of them stand out in my mind at this time. The yardstick is the one that I recall.
So this would be like the biggest expense of the campaign?
That was probably, although newspaper advertising and television advertising, of course, would have probably ranked in about the same category for expense.
So what do you attribute your victory to, not wet naps or more popular than yardsticks, of course?
No. Well, Mr. Anzalotti had only been in office 1 year. He had only been appointed to the position. The name had not been on the ballot for many, many years. And I think that before he was too solidly entrenched in the office, and before his name became so well identified, I ran against him. Now, the name Gil Martin had done very well when I ran for the Court of Appeals. My brother Tom had been a state representative running countywide for many, many years. And so the Gil Martin name in some of the outlying areas of Mahoning County had an acceptance that many other names might not have had at that particular time. And so I think it was just a combination of those circumstances all put together.
So the name was important, not so much in Mahoning County as it was in the, not so much as in the Youngstown area of Mahoning County as opposed to the outer area.
Yes, I think that certain names definitely are an asset even in a local election. And I think the name Gil Martin was a stronger name than some other names may have been at that particular time, because Tommy had been a state representative, had been effective, and had earned and deserved voter support.
Yes.
This is interview number two with Gil Martin.
Okay. Mr. Gil Martin?
Now that you achieved the position of prosecuting attorney, you had to face a problem at all after the official state. That is of separating politics from your work. How do you handle this problem?
Well, it really isn't any great problem. The political aspect of the office is rather minute, I would say. We do advise other public officials, and of course many of them are Republicans or Democrats, depending upon which locality the information is coming from. So far as prosecuting people that are charged with crimes, we certainly don't consider one way or the other whether they happen to be Democrats or Republicans or whether they happen to be friends or acquaintances, because you simply could never conduct an office on that basis.
So do you ever find it difficult, though, at times?
Well, yes, when we had the situation involving our investigation of the Youngstown Police Department, we had about 13 or 14 police officers who were involved to a lesser or greater degree. Some of the police officers I had worked with on a variety of cases prior to that episode. Many of them I knew their families, and it made it rather difficult to handle that aspect. But what we did was just categorize the different participants and deal with them according to their degree of involvement, because there's no other way that you could handle it.
So you never had party people coming to you and asking you, you know, if you could take it easy on it, such and such, or you had a basically free hand?
Well, yes. I've had friends of mine who are in the Democratic or the Republican parties communicate with me from time to time to let me know of their concern about a particular case. That will happen. But ordinarily, there's not much difference that it could make, because you either have the facts or you don't. And you can't make a good case out of a poor one, or vice versa.
Okay. Now, when you first took office, there's usual change in staffs. What did you see in your staff? What points did you see in them that were superior, say, to the previous staff? What were you looking for when you filled your staff?
Well, I was looking for a staff that would give adequate representation to the township trustees and give adequate representation to the various county offices. The civil aspect of this office is much greater than most people realize. We represent 15 or 16 school boards. We represent all of the township trustees. We represent the Board of Elections, the Board of Health, all of the county office holders. So civilly, we have a great deal of responsibility. So we attempted to try to communicate a little better with some of the offices and areas that we represent. Then we tried to provide a little better service in the county court area where our office has direct jurisdiction. There are four county courts in Mahoning County at this time, one in Austintown, one in Boardman, one in Canfield, and one in Sebring. Now, the Sebring office is rather remote from Youngstown, and as I understand it, in the past, nobody was too wild about driving out to handle their assignments in Sebring. So we got a lawyer from the Sebring area, Richard Ross, and Mr. Ross has been handling the Sebring court, and of course, it's home for him, and he's just delighted with the arrangement, and so are we.
Have the people noticed the difference?
Well, I don't know if the people have noticed it, but I would assume they have, because somebody needing a search warrant or somebody needing a prosecutor to advise somebody in the Sebring area has someone there.
Whereas in the past, they would have to come all the way to Youngstown to get the services of the office during the periods when the court was not in operation.
As far as we know, in past situations when this arose, there was no reaction from the prosecuting attorney?
Well, I don't know exactly how they handled it. I know that when they had regular assignments in Sebring, when somebody had to drive over and take care of it. But there were other situations that developed when the court is not scheduled to be in session. The police chief needs a search warrant, or they have a question about what charge to bring. Every now and then you'll get a borderline case between a variety of charges, and they would like the opinion of somebody before they commence a prosecution, or maybe there shouldn't be any prosecution at all. And I think that the police in Smith Township, where Sebring is located, and in Sebring, have found it a much more agreeable arrangement. And we have also, because we don't have to pay him mileage. He's there. And we don't have to provide a car driving over two or three times a week and the expenses of going back and forth.
Who are some of the other staff members in their various positions that you assigned?
Well, not long after I became prosecutor, the first civil man was Harold Rickard Jr. Harold left the office about 2 years ago. When Harold left, we had Dennis Haynes as our civil man, and Dennis left the office about 6 months ago. Now, since that time, we now have John Kitch, and that's spelled K-I-C-Z, but pronounced Kitch, and he is our civil man at this time. Our delinquent tax section, which handles delinquent personal and real estate taxes, ever since I've been prosecutor, has been under Peter Michaels, who started on that job and is still on that job. The juvenile representative is Jack Jackerbeck. He has been our juvenile man since I first took office back in January of 69 and still continues with that assignment at this time. We've had a variety of assistants that have worked in the criminal branch. One of our first appointments was Mike Kosach. And of course, Mike was a very great trial lawyer and a great source of inspiration and strength to the whole office. Unfortunately, Mike died about 2 years ago, and we still miss him very much, but he was really a fine assistant, and he just died a very untimely death from a sudden, I don't know just what it was in his lungs, but he was talking on the telephone at home after having been ill and just died. It was terrible. Well, we've had Jack Walsh has been on the civil branch since I first began, and Pat Pichiro. We now have Jim Filomena, who came on with our staff about 6 months ago. We have Mike Rich. He's been on the staff for about a year and a half or 2 years. So that the staff of lawyers has remained fairly constant. There's been a few changes, primarily in the civil end.
So they have definitely lived up to your expectations.
Oh yes, in fact, they have performed beyond my expectations, because when I first was elected prosecutor, the grand jury was returning indictments of about 180 to 200 in a year for the prosecutor's office to dispose of. Last year, the grand jury returned, I believe, about 750 indictments. So you can see that the crime rate and the rate of handling in this office has risen geometrically rather than arithmetically. And despite this, we have managed to keep our trial docket current. And we're one of the very few counties in the state of Ohio that have been commended by the Ohio Supreme Court because of our according defendants a speedy trial.
Now, your first term, I'm not too sure about second, but definitely the first term, the rate of convictions went up. Now, is this due solely to the fact that there was a greater bulk, or was it something else?
Well, I'm not really familiar with the statistic you're talking about. I'm sure that the number of people who were convicted rose. I don't know if the percentage would have risen based upon the number of charges. I couldn't rightly state that. But obviously, in a year where you return 700 and some indictments, you're bound to have more convictions than you would have had in a year where there were only 200.
And that has been the rate of growth. It's been rising every year.
Is there anything, well, you're in a good position to see, the inner workings of this. Anything you can attribute to this rise?
Well, I think it's just the overall permissiveness of society. I think that there's been a breakdown in family life. I don't think there's nearly as much discipline as there formerly was years ago. I think we now have a lot of working mothers. Some of this, I'm sure, is necessary, but these working mothers are unable to put sufficient attention to their children and give them sufficient training and guidance. I think the mobility of our youth is a big factor. The neighborhood concept that we knew years ago was a factor that limited an awful lot of improper activities in our youth. In other words, if a child had stayed in his neighborhood, he would have maybe 35 or 40 families that knew him very well. And if he got out of line, he would be promptly reported to his parents and probably disciplined by one of the neighbors. Today, you have a young fellow, he can turn 16 years of age, living in Austintown, he can get the car and be over in Pennsylvania in 20 minutes, and he's far removed from anybody that knows him. He's far removed from any of the restraints that would normally be there if he were back in the neighborhood where people know him.
So the great percentage of crime, you can attribute to younger people then?
Well, yes, the crimes start out while you're usually the juveniles. Juveniles, and the rate of juvenile crime has risen even faster than the rate of adult crime.
And did you take a guess on statistics?
Well, I wouldn't know just what the numbers are, but I can say that the years ago, back in the 40s, it was very rare that you would find a juvenile charged with, say, an armed robbery. You'd find somebody that may have stolen a car, improperly used an automobile. It would usually be a 16 or 17 or 18 year old who was just going into adulthood. Today, you have young people, 14 and 15, committing extortion and armed robbery, and girls are committing these crimes at 12, 13, and 14. Which was simply unheard of back in the 40s, to my knowledge. And this may have been going on in some of the larger communities that I would have no way of knowing about. But to the best of my knowledge and belief, that was a very uncommon thing here in Mahoning County. Today, some of our juveniles are charged with very heinous crimes. And it's young boys and young girls. And it's just a complete departure from past experience.
Is there any special difficulty in handling a juvenile case, say, as opposed to a case of an adult?
No, there's not any particular difference. It used to be that the juvenile court was looked upon as the protector of the child, and therefore they would not accord them very many of their rights of due process, because it was felt that this was the court for the advice and the guidance of the juvenile. That prevailed until a recent the Whittington case and the In re Galt, which laid a much firmer requirement for due process in the juvenile court. So today, the procedures are substantially similar in the juvenile court as they are in the adult court.
Okay, would you like to talk a little bit about cases you came across which were of special importance to you personally, and also you think important to the county?
Well, we've had a variety of cases that had a big impact on county government, dealing with the Budget Commission and how we allocate the taxes from the state among the political subdivisions. Austintown a few years ago made an appeal to the Ohio Supreme Court, claiming that they were not getting a fair distribution of the tax monies from the Budget Commission. The Budget Commission is a three-member group consisting of the auditor, the treasurer, and the prosecuting attorney. And we are charged by law with distributing the funds among the political subdivisions that make up Mahoning County on the basis of need. We had been making these allocations, and everyone had more or less gone along with the manner and form that we had handled the distribution up until about 4 or 5 years ago. Austintown took an appeal to the Ohio Supreme Court. Unfortunately for Austintown, they lost their appeal and they were cut back rather than given more funds. And this cutback also cut back many of the other townships. The funds were in effect taken from Austintown and Boardman townships and some of the other townships and given to the city of Youngstown and to the county of Mahoning. So that was not a very celebrated case from the standpoint of a lot of laymen, but it certainly had a big impact on the operations of county government and township government because it reallocated the funds. So far as criminal matters are concerned, we've had the prosecution of Theodis Jackson. Theodis was charged with shooting the pharmacist at the drugstore on Federal Street near the Old Warner Theater. Now, that case drew a great deal of notoriety because of the actions of the pharmacists. The pharmacists and people owning the drugstores were marching all over town calling for law and order and calling for no bonds and calling for a lot of extraordinary remedies. He was tried in Judge Cavalier's court and convicted of first-degree murder, and he's presently in the Ohio Penitentiary, or in one of the branches from the Ohio State Pen. We had the individual who drove up over the sidewalk, a fellow named Anderson, who back in November, a few years ago, drove up over the sidewalk and killed 7 people right about noon in November of about 1972. That case was handled in Judge Osborne's court. Mr. Anderson wound up doing 2 years in the Mahoning County Jail because these were vehicular homicide offenses rather than, there was nothing to indicate any intentional killing. It was just an accidental type killing, but it did draw a great deal of national notoriety. Well, we've had several other cases that became kind of celebrated at the time, but I don't recall just any of them that really stand out so greatly in my mind.
What about the Stop 5 incident? What was the impact of that on the Democratic Party and on yourself?
Well, I don't know that it had much impact upon me. The Stop 5 incident was the incident that occurred about 6 years ago, just prior to the November elections when Mayor Flatus was seeking a fourth term. According to most people, it was felt that Flask was almost assured of being reelected. His opponent, Jack Hunter, who was at that time the Fifth Ward councilman, didn't profess to have much confidence in his ability to carry the election. This incident took place just about 4 or 5 days before the election and involved a confrontation between the Teamsters organization and members of FASH, which is the Fraternal Order of Steel Haulers. As I recall the incident, Stoney, which is Stoneburner, had a contract with Republic Steel to bring molten iron from Warren into Stop 5 to some sort of a processing plant down there. And these were steel haulers now. And there was a strike. And apparently the people from FASH were trying to prevent the deliveries from being made to the Republic plant. The Teamsters, the regular Teamsters from 377, were not in accord with some of the attitudes of FASH, and they were trying to assist in getting the steel delivered. So they had this confrontation down on Poland Avenue at Stop 5, where several individuals were badly injured, and one individual who had come down from Cleveland to help one side or the other was killed. It did cause a great stir, and there are many who feel that this was the very serious contributing factor in Mayor Flask's failure to be reelected. I really don't think that the incident had very much impact upon me or upon this office.
I'm just concerned that people felt this was the reason. You talk about some of the officials in the Democratic Party.
Well, yes. I mean, after the election was over, and we were surprised to learn that Mayor Flask had been defeated by Councilman Hunter, we began to try to analyze what happened. I myself, at the time of the incident, didn't really feel that everyone would blame him for a outbreak of violence on the streets of Youngstown, because he certainly hadn't conspired or aided and abetted anything. But there are many who felt that this was a contributing factor, and I'm sure that it was.
Why do you think people would blame him? Any discussion on your acquaintances?
Well, I would think that because many members of the Youngstown Police Department were down at Stop 5, I believe they were escorted. One group was escorted by some members of the Youngstown Police Department. Possibly they expected the mayor to do something very dramatic when this happened. Maybe they felt he should have suspended his police chief or fired his police chief. I don't know what they really thought should have been done. But maybe they felt that nothing happened for some time afterwards. But things of that sort do not get cleared up within 2 or 3 days. It just came at a very awkward time. It's just like clearing up the Watergate matter in Washington. The Watergate matter began 2 years before it reached its culmination. And that's just about the way most of these investigations and episodes are really dealt with.
Do you think that the impact, not the impact itself, but the after effects of it have carried over?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Well, of course, it's carried over so far as the Democratic Party is concerned, because Mayor Hunter was elected and then re-elected and re-elected again. And now he may be seeking a fourth term. I don't know what his pleasure will be so far as that is concerned, but he is now just completing his third term, and we've never had a fourth term mayor of Youngstown. So possibly he's going to go for a fourth term.
Okay, let's get back to that aspect. I wanted to ask you first about your campaign in 72, for re-election.
Yes.
Was it any different? You're an incumbent rather than the challenger. What effect did this have on you?
Well, it's far easier to run for elective office as an incumbent. When you are an incumbent office holder and you go to a rally or a banquet or any type of public meeting, ordinarily you will be introduced. You will be recognized. Possibly you'll be given a place where you can sit or be observed. You may be called upon to speak. When you are a candidate running against an incumbent office holder, ordinarily none of those things accrue to you. The only time that you may be recognized is at one of your own party's functions, when you probably need it the least. But when you're out at a card party or at a rally or at a dinner, whatever it might be, ordinarily you would never be recognized. You might go and pay your money and be there and mingle, pass out some cards, but ordinarily you would not have it made easy for you. This is more or less a general rule that would apply not just to my situation, but almost any candidate situation. So it's much easier to be a candidate as an office holder.
Well, what changes is this demand in your campaign? The fact that you were the incumbent, it was easier.
Yes.
But what adjustments did you have to make from, say, the type you ran before? Obviously, they were pleasant adjustments.
Yeah, they were much easier. It was much easier to campaign. We ran upon our record. We ran upon the fact that we had been commended by the Ohio Supreme Court for having given speedy trials, that Mahoning County was one of the few counties across the state of Ohio that had this distinction. And it was primarily through the efforts of this office in conjunction with the Court of Common Pleas. So that was a factor. So as I recall, I'm looking at as I recall, our ad that we ran was primarily, it just said Mahoning County has been commended by the Ohio Supreme Court as being the first of all Ohio counties in having a current criminal docket. That tells you a lot about prosecuting attorney Vincent E. Gilmartin. Re-elect Democrat Gilmartin. He's fair, he's prompt, he's efficient. And this was, I'm showing you what was our re-election ad. This was the only type of ad we ran.
So you said your expenses were reduced drastically?
Oh, yes. Yes, we didn't use any television time. We didn't use any radio time. We merely ran some ads in the newspaper, and we passed out some wet maps. And the wet maps were similar to the ones that I used, although they say compliments of Vincent E. Gilmartin, your prosecuting attorney, rather than what was on the original ones that we used 4 years earlier.
What about your staff? Were they basically the same people?
Yes. There's been very small turnover in our staff. A few of the girls have gotten married and moved away. And a few of the lawyers have left for personal reasons or because their private practice was building up. But by and large, we've had a very harmonious relationship.
I want to get back into the party a little bit, the party as you see it. You would talk a little bit about what we could consider to be the party leaders in Mahoney County, who they are, what are their qualities, things like that. Your personal opinion.
Well, we have the chairman, of course, is the leader of the Democratic Party in Mahoney County, and that's Jack Sullivan. We have other party officers. Mike Cornick is the secretary, and Nick Bernard is the vice chairman, and Mary Murphy is the recording secretary, and I believe Horace Tetlow, our county recorder, is the treasurer of the party. Now, these are the actual officers of the Mahoning County Democratic Party. Now, Mr. Sullivan's been our chairman for about 25 years, and of course, he learned his political training from John Vitullo, who was the chairman before him, and probably several other chairmen who had served back in the earlier years of the party. He has been taught to organize, to have a lot of activity, to have a unified type of campaign. The Democratic Party in this county endorses in the primary, which is different than most other counties. We endorse in the primary, we endorse in the general, and by and large, the endorsement of the Democratic Party has been made to stick. It's very difficult to beat an endorsed Democratic candidate in a primary. And very often that candidate will win in the primary and go on to victory in the fall, too, because most of the people in this area consider themselves Democrats.
On that, the idea of endorsement in the primary, now again, this is for unification.
Yes.
Now, do you feel this is a good way to run a campaign, or do you think there's something missing if you don't open the primaries?
Well, there are arguments both ways. I do think that the endorsement procedure is a little preferable. I think it tends to let some balance come to a slate. It gives the party an opportunity to actually weigh the qualifications. And I don't say that every time the party has always endorsed the very best candidate, but by and large, the party has endorsed a representative candidate and very often the best candidate.
How do they arrive at their endorsements,
Well, the precinct committeemen are actually the ones who make the final endorsement. Of course, we have 420 precincts in Mahoning County, and they are called to a meeting, and the various aspirants are placed under consideration, and then it's done by vote.
Is there any personal appearances?
Yes. The individuals are given the opportunity to address the group and explain why they think they should be the endorsed candidate, for what reason. And individuals are able to hear them. Now, every candidate that is running is not considered by 420 precinct committeemen. It's only for countywide candidates that would be true. If somebody's running for first ward council, then just the first ward committeeman would get into that picture. If they're running for citywide office, then just the committeeman from the city of Youngstown.
Okay. Is the vote taken, for the endorsement, is it like an open ballot, a show of hands?
It's usually by an open ballot, by a show of hands or by a standing vote.
On the leaders again, the officers, are they the ones with the real power, or is there any other people to hold positions?
Well, yeah, the party is structured that you have the precinct committeemen who are elected every other year at the primary elections. Now, that is where the authority really is vested. And from that group, they select a chairman, and they organize and have a chairman elected and other officers. Now, there's also provision for appointing an executive committee, and the executive committee is members that are taken from the city at large, members are taken from the various wards, members are taken from Campbell, Struthers, Austintown, and some are appointed as executive committeemen at large. And these people are usually more available to be called to a meeting than the entire precinct committeeman. And a lot of preliminary work is done by the executive committee, and a lot of preliminary work is done by a group called the ward captains, who are the ones that more or less handle certain areas of their county on election day. So these groups are not the final authority, but they certainly have an advisory capacity, which has great impact so far as the regular precinct committeemen are concerned.
Now, in Mahoning County, is there a great deal of communication between, say, the precinct captains and the executive committee?
Yes, I would say so. Yes, in fact, very often some people are on both committees. And they do work in conjunction with each other. And very often, if the chairman is getting ready to commence a campaign, they might have a meeting of the ward captains and tell them just what we're doing and how the campaign is going, where the rallies are to be, or where the meetings or house parties, whatever is happening. And possibly there might be a dinner, at which time we would all come to a dinner and be advised who the endorsed candidates are and what their qualifications are, and then we would put out group literature with all of the endorsed candidates on.
Would you consider the party, the party officials, to be a fairly harmonious group?
Yes, I would, definitely.
What do you see as the goals of the party?
Well, in Mahoning County, we are an extension of the Ohio Democratic Party. And of course, the Ohio Democratic Party is an extension of the National Democratic Party. And we, as Democratic office holders and as Democratic candidates, when we sign our petition, we say that we subscribe to the principles of the Democratic Party and that we will attempt to carry out its platform and the things that the Democrats have committed themselves to do. By and large, that is just about what the mission of the Democratic Party is in Mahoning County. We have Democratic office holders. We help Democratic candidates who are running statewide. We help Democratic candidates at the national level for the United States Senate, for the Congress, and for President and Vice President. It's really just a breakdown of the larger party.
So it's not really so much a self-sustaining unit as it is part of the whole.
Yes, it's just part of the whole. We are required under the charter of the Democratic Party, which was recently enacted out in Kansas City, to conduct our meetings in such a fashion as to meet the standards spelled out by the National Democratic Party. They simply don't go for star chamber or rump sessions or kangaroo courts or anything of that sort.
Now, would you consider the party, by any political standards whatsoever, to be successful?
Oh, yes. I would have to say that the Democratic Party in Mahoning County is probably one of the leading local parties based upon successful candidacies and successful deliverance of the vote. In the last election, we lost the governor's race. But Mahoning County carried just about as well this time as it did 4 years earlier when Gilligan won. And Mahoning County has usually delivered a very good vote for the Democrats.
And this again brings us to the whole question of Manhunter. You know, say somebody 200 years from now is looking back over the records of the county and finds out such a large Democratic, large number of Democrats, registered Democrats in the area, yet for at least four terms, possibly four terms, we might have a Republican mayor.
Yes.
Now, again, you might ask why. I mean, how does this happen?
Well, there's the popularity of an individual candidate. Sometimes a candidate will come along who will draw a lot of support from both parties. We've had three-term Republican mayors in the past, even though Mahoning County was a Democratic bastion at all times. Chuck Henderson served as mayor for three terms many years ago, and he was a Republican, but a very well-regarded individual who has gone on to be a very acceptable and agreeable probate judge, and who is still very well-received by the electorate and very well-regarded. Now, Jack Hunter has had the good fortune to enjoy that same measure of success. He's had three terms now as mayor of the city of Youngstown. I just think that the electorate, although nominally Democrat, will normally support the Democratic candidate, all of the things being equal. But I don't think that they're so mindless that they're going to just support every Democrat regardless of all other considerations. And you will see from time to time that in communities that are overwhelmingly Republican, they may elect a Democratic mayor or a Democratic sheriff or a Democratic auditor, whatever else. And the same is true of communities that are overwhelmingly Democrat. They'll come in and elect a few Republican office holders. I think it's the individuals are probably thinking that this is a check of some sort. And if you look across the state of Ohio today, you'll find there's a Republican mayor in Cleveland. And in Cuyahoga County, the Democratic Party is very strong. There is a Republican mayor in Akron. And Summit County has a very strong Democratic organization. There's a Republican mayor in Warren, Ohio. And they have a substantial Democratic organization there. And you will just find these things because I think that the electorate is becoming more selective. They may feel that they are Democratic, but that doesn't mean that they're going to vote a straight party ticket. They will consider themselves Democrats, vote in a Democratic primary, but be quite selective when they get into the general election. And possibly they will have voted for 85% to 90% of the Democratic candidates, so they're certainly well justified in considering themselves Democrats. But where they find a Republican to be doing a decent job, they'll go over and give him their support.
And what's the party's reaction to having a three-term Republican mayor?
Well, the party is quite concerned. They would like to see the city of Youngstown in Democratic hands. But an awful lot of Democrats are working in the Hunter administration. His law director is a Democrat. His finance director is a Democrat. I think his water commissioner. If you were to go through the entire office, the entire cabinet, the chances are there are very few Republicans in cabinet positions. I know his fire chief has been a Democrat. If you were to go through the entire administration, you'd find a great deal of Democratic officials appointed by Mayor Hunter. And of course, that's necessary in a community that is where the majority are Democrats. You must have some appeal to the Democratic side, or you simply could not win.
Now, if you had the ability, whatever, or the voice, what changes would you make in the party?
In the Democratic Party?
In this area. Or as a whole?
I would try to appeal to the younger electorate, to try to get the younger citizens starting to participate in the democratic process. Now, they are presently trying to do that, but it's a very difficult chore. The young people that called for the vote between 18 and 21 received the vote, but I don't think they put a very large impact into what happened after they got the vote. I think that they've now gotten the vote and they've just more or less participated in politics to a greater or lesser degree than the older members of the electorate. But it's always a good thing to see a young group coming in and beginning to move through the various chairs of government. And that is one thing that I would like to see happen. And I know they're trying to get this type of activity, but I can't say we've been very successful.
What approach are they taking in this area?
Well, we have the Young Democratic Club at Youngstown State. We have a Young Democratic Club now in the South County out around Boardman. We have the regular Young Democratic Club that meets at the Democratic headquarters. And we have gone to the schools. We go to explain government and explain politics in the high schools. And we have attempted to make things accessible to the younger people. But I don't know. I can't say that we've enjoyed any measure of success.
What qualities does a person need to rise up in the Democratic Party?
Well, I can't say that there's any one quality that would be required. Some individuals have a variety of qualities that have made them successful. Some individuals have one or two qualities that would assist them. I think that inside the Democratic Party, you should have an attitude that pretty much conforms with the National Democratic Party's thinking. I think you'd have to be a little more liberal than conservative. I think that you would have to have some understanding of the needs and the problems of the common people. And if you're articulate, of course, that's very good, but we have some office holders who are not particularly articulate. And they seem to do quite well at the ballot. If you're able to go well on television, or if you're able to field questions, I'm sure that's a very desirable trait. But there again, that's not a hard and fast rule. I wouldn't know of any hard and fast rule. I just think that an individual has to keep his commitments, has to remember who his friends are, who his supporters are, and try to give genuine service to the entire community. It's a combination of things, really.
Now, for example, there's Mr. Sullivan. He is at the top of the executive committee.
Right.
What do you've had a lot of contact with him. To what do you attribute his ability to hold the leadership for, 20-some years, which is a fairly long time?
Well, he's been a very successful chairman. It's just like the electorate of Chicago just reelected Daley as mayor. Because he's been a very successful mayor. And Jack Sullivan has been a successful Democratic chairman. He took over a county that was overwhelmingly Democrat, where most of the offices were held by Democrats, and he has continued that. Even though there's been a great erosion of Democratic offices in many other areas, if you were to go to many of the large cities, you would find that the Democrats have lost several of their big positions. By and large, Mahoning County has maintained a high degree of Democratic office holders. We have 11 partisan offices at the county level at this time. 10 of them are Democrat.
How is he successful? What does he do?
Well, of course, he has the precinct committeemen performing certain functions. He keeps the office holders working in unison with each other. When the city hall is up, he gets the support of the various county office holders. When we had city hall and the county office holders were up, they would reciprocate. The office holders tend to work together for the common purpose, and I think it has been a very satisfactory arrangement. This takes a good deal of organization. This takes a good deal of effort on his part, and he keeps his ear to the ground to find out what is happening, and extends a lot of valuable assistance to candidates, because he can pretty well advise them about different issues and different matters that are of interest or concern to the electorate.
Now, how do you, as talk about your role as prosecutor and how you serve the party as being prosecutor?
Well, actually, it would be kind of an indirect thing. The party
of course, has many young Democratic lawyers that may be aspiring for a position. And, of course, our office does hire young lawyers. And we can give advice to individuals because we do have people who are practicing attorneys, which is a pretty good factor when you consider how a particular office could help a particular party.
Now, one more question on relationship between labor and the party, especially labor's leadership.
Yes.
And the party. Just how close is it? How tight are they?
Well, they are mostly in accord on their ends. The labor, Frank Lesaganich, who is District 26 director, and Al Shipka, who is in charge of the AFL-CIO Council, they get along very well, I would say, with the Democratic leadership. The Democrats mostly subscribe to the programs and the policies of organized labor. There are areas where they may disagree from time to time, but by and large, they are in accord, and normally they would endorse substantially the same candidates that the Democratic Party has endorsed.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.